Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode contains scenes which are not suitable for children and which some listeners may find distressing. This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
But yeah, at the beginning I felt safe. I felt special. I felt that I was doing a good job. I was trusted. I was doing the right things. Like collecting the money wasn't a problem. Everything was going really well. I was really fast. I was getting paid well. I was making good tips. I was sitting in front of the van. I was trusted to go out with Rita. Everything was going great until the summer came and Jeffy got sacked for Robert. That's what Brian told me. He told me to sack Jeffy. Jeffy was the one that done the deliveries at night time at the milk point. Just two people, him and Brian. And Brian said he needed someone to do the deliveries because he'd sacked Jeffy for robbing on him. And what did I want to do? My summer holidays were coming up. It was coming up to where the summer holidays, we had 3 months off. And I was like, darling, I'm in no way, my mom's going to let me do this. Like, and he says, yeah, we can convince her. Both of us can. He went and spoke to her. Say it was the summer holiday to just do it for the summer. She said once I went back to school in September, took ages to convince her, but we convinced her eventually. And that's when it all changed, yeah, when it was just me and him by ourselves. Everything just changed then. Yeah.
This is the witness, in his own words. Episode 2, The Night Shift.
I think it was, it was great to have a job, but for me, I think it was just more to find something that I was happy with doing. There was nothing. I felt normal, like I made friends, I was getting better in school because I stood up for myself in school, so people are leaving me alone. And then I had the job, like, so everything was finally starting to work out for me. Like, there was no trouble. Everything was, like, within a good place I was. Like, obviously I missed my dad, but that was the hardest thing. Like, I went to see him as much as I could. But I got a job. I was earning good money. So I get paid a 10 off a Friday, 10 off a Saturday. But I used to get loads of tips. Like, some weeks, like, back then, like, I could clear £50. Like, £50 back then. Like, I was only 12. That was loads of money for me. So I was being loaded. It was great, like, having the best life ever. Couldn't wait for Fridays and Saturdays. So it was brilliant, like.
What were you spending the money on?
Clothes, just clothes and stuff like that. To be fair, I won't lie, I used to, every Saturday, because I didn't work Sunday, I used to go out with my friends, and we used to get 6 cans of Dutch Gold and 20 cigarettes, and I used to start going to piss. But I used to do that anyways, before the milk round. So, but we won't get into trouble around like that. We weren't doing that, like, we used to meet at the park, and we got our 6 cans of Dutch Gold. And the smokes, and we'd all sit in the park and then try and sneak back in the house. My mum caught me, smell drink, caught me. I know you went to a drink, but we've done it, like, everyone's done it.
Yeah. And how did it feel to have that money for the first time, like, to be sort of independent?
I walked, yeah, it was great not having to depend on my mum. Niall was great, to be fair. He used to give me pocket money every week because he was like my dad. He was involved in the Sinn Féin, and big into it. He used to go and do the club nights, you know, for raising the money for the provost. and he used to deliver their leaflets. So he used to give me the leaflets delivered around Blanchardstown. I used to get pocket money for a fiver, but then he'd give me a tenner for delivering the leaflets for the fundraising nights for the Provost. So they used to do that in Blakestown pub and all, and the shanty. So I used to deliver the leaflets to the houses to get the people to go to the pubs, and he used to give me the tenner. So that'd get me my smokes, and that would get 10, 5 Dutch gold and 10 John Blevelio.
Dear God. Age 12, working as a propagandist for the Provost in order to fund your Saturday nights on Dutch gold and John Blevelio. Oh, Jesus.
Is that bad?
Yeah.
It's not, is it?
It's different to what I was doing at 12 anyway, that's for sure.
Well, I wasn't doing that. I was just putting letters in the letterbox.
Yeah, that's
Can you introduce yourself as well?
I'm Nicola Tallant, and I'm a crime journalist here in Dublin.
And can you tell me how you guys met?
You'd just been beaten up. It was 2012, I think.
Yeah, I'd just been beaten up and stabs on the case. The lip.
I was kind of investigating some practices in the witness protection programme that I felt weren't very good. And I believed that people who went into it were so vulnerable. They were the most vulnerable people. But every time I went to try and get answers from it, I was just being stonewalled and told that it was, it was secretive and they couldn't answer any questions. And then when I met Joey, I realised, is this secretive because they're hiding how they've behaved with people like this and how they've treated people like this? And he was just, from a human point of view, forget about the job, he was just in such a bad way. And I just really felt I couldn't leave him. I just didn't know. I just didn't think how anybody could leave a human being like that. And yet the state had left him like that. All those things we're supposed to believe in, all those things I'd been championing, had left him like this.
I remember I was walking down past Dublin City Council and those three fellas walking towards me. And I heard your man, one of them saying, that's Joey the Lips of Callaghan there. And then within a minute they were on top of me. After the beating, I was popping fucking Valium like they were old fashioned. I was sleeping tablets, I was taking sleeping tablets, probably 10 sleeping tablets in the daytime. I just didn't want to function, didn't want to live. I just wanted to die, and I was using my old name, Joey O'Callaghan. That was my name I was using. And I was in bits, and then I just rang Nicola and just said, I want to talk to you.
That's funny now, because I actually saw someone who wanted to be alive. That's exactly what I saw in you.
Yeah, and I just didn't feel like...
I didn't think for a second that you didn't want to be alive. I thought you really wanted to be alive. At that point, even, you were tired and you were you're a bit scraggly and you do take a lot of care with your appearance, but you were you'd been beaten up and you had sort of a T-shirt on and your bulletproof vest thing, which was well worn. You could have done with a new one.
Yeah, well, I've
invested. I just saw a person who had done so much to survive and wanted to survive and just wanted a chance at it being a little bit easier.
How was it different work-wise? So you're working nights then?
I was doing Friday and Saturday collection, and I was working every day. I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The only day I didn't work was Sunday. So I got up, what happened was, Niall used to wake me up at 3. Niall was brilliant. He used to grow up at two, and he used to make me breakfast. He used to make me toast sandwiches, and he used to make me porridge. And he'd wake me up about 2:30, 3:00, give me breakfast and all. And then I'd go to Brian, it's come at 3:00 in the morning. So it was literally delivering the milk. We delivered to shops, factories, and houses. And with a big round, we done Ladieswell, Cardiff, Whitestown, Sheepmoor, Fort Lawn, Huntstown, Hartstown, Portstown, Castleknock, Kilmoyne. Yeah, done all over Blantyre. We did probably the biggest round in the dairy, with the big round. He used to do that round in 4.5 hours. I used to have to do it with me in 3. So it was grand. Really enjoyed it. It just got different though. He was different. He was always slagging and always taking the piss. Do you know what I mean? But he was a lot different than he was when I was when Rita and I would be there and all the other lads would be there. He was a lot more vulgar and everything. That makes sense. He used to say a lot of creepy things and make jokes where you just to laugh at him. That made sense.
What?
Yeah, he just about women and just about me. Then he'd say he used to start slagging me. Do you know what I mean? He used to slag me a lot, but it was like banter. Well, I thought it was banter. I didn't realise what it was. Does that make sense? He used to say things about my sister and about my ma and about women in general. And then he'd talk about me, and he'd be on about my lips and all that. So I was really small. I had big red lips. And they actually really called me Joey the Lips because of my lips. It wasn't just because of some gangster name or whatever. They actually called me Joey the Lips because of my lips. He'd just say things that would make me uncomfortable. He'd slag me sisters and slag me man and all stuff like that. Stuff where my dad was alive at the time. And I was thinking, if my dad hears you saying that, you'd be fucking dead. You would be killed him, stone dead. The stuff he was saying to me, I kind of just kept to myself. Maybe if I had went home and started saying, ma, he had said this and he had said that, things might have been different. But then I think part of me was kind of thinking, well, I'm not getting a good job here, let's not fuck this up. Do you know what I'm saying? I was happy, I was making a few quid. I was able to buy what I wanted, do what I wanted. Everything was going well, I was enjoying doing it. Until the Jesse incident. I'd never met Jesse because Jesse'd done the deliveries, so I'd never met him. I'd never met him once. And we were delivering up in Huntstown. And the other milkman, he had a Hoyas van and he was going past it in a Hoyas van. He was coming down the road and we were parked and hanging out the side of the van was only our man Jesse that worked for us. That I got his job. They had robbed Brian. Well, Brian said he'd robbed him. That's why he sacked him. And he went past as he did in the van, hanging out the side of the van with a big smile on his face. Next minute, Brian just lost it. His face just went red. And back then, he didn't have a handbrake like that. He had a handbrake like that. You pull it and twist it. And he pulled it and twisted it, put his hand underneath the seat, pulled out the hammer, ran around the corner, and just all he could hear was screams, screaming, 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 shouting. I'd never hear that like it in my life. All he could hear, smack, smack. You could hear the bones and all. You could hear everything just crunching and smacking. And he must have been hitting him in the head and everything. It was just horrendous. The noises that he was making, then he just came around the corner and it was just blood all over him, Brian. He had blood all over his hands, all over his face, all over the shirt, everywhere. And he was like, his eyes were bulging. He was like, that's what'll happen if you ever try and fucking rob me. If you ever try and rob me, that's what'll happen to you. And I was like, why are you shouting at me for? I'm looking at him thinking, why is he shouting at me? He was like, there's blood all over him. And he was like, get a milk bottle. So I got a milk bottle and I opened the top of it and he told me to pour it over him when he was washing his hands. He was trying to get the blood off his hands and he took his shirt off. Poured the milk bottle over his head, all the milk all over him, and he was washing himself with the shirt. And then he took the shirt off, put it under the seat, put the jacket on, dipped it back up, and just went on as normal. I was just literally didn't talk for that. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to talk. And he just looked at me, kept saying to me, if you ever try to rob me, this is what will happen to you. If you ever, ever try and take the piss out of me, that's what will happen to you. I'll get what he just got. And I remember him just dropping me home, and I just walked straight into the house, ran straight up to bed and just jumped into the bed, put the blanket over my head, and I didn't know what to do. I was terrified. And that was it, and I just seen a different side to him. He was just different. That was when he was just different. He was never the same again. And I was like, I don't want this. In my head, I was like, I don't want the job anymore. And in my head, I was lying there thinking, how am I going to? How am I going to get out of going to work? Like, how do I tell him I don't want to do it anymore? It wasn't, I didn't need, like, in my head, I was like, oh, I don't want the money now. It's not worth it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what if he does that to me? I was afraid. Then I was afraid to tell him I didn't want it. I was afraid to say I don't want to work anymore. Because of what I seen him do to Jesse, I was like, what will he do to me? Like, I was like, I didn't know what was going on. I was getting involved in this world. It was like I was strangling me. Like, it was just, I was getting caught up. Like I was like, I only wanted a job in the milk van. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I didn't realise what was going on. Like, I realised quick enough afterwards. I was like, this is dangerous. Like, this is bogey as fuck. That's when I realised that I got more than a bargain for. Like, that's when I realised all I wanted was a job. Like, all I wanted was pocket money. But I knew it was just something that changed everything. The fear in me after seeing what he'd done to that guy, and he changed from that minute. And he warned me, like, straight away. He told me, "That's what'll happen to you if you ever rob from me." Then there wasn't an issue. We just, a few times he dropped in. I wonder how Jesse's doing, ha ha ha, laughing. Just little reminders. I felt like he was dropping little things into my head now and again. He was nice. He'd be grand, playing music, having a laugh, giving you a cigarette. Everything'd be happy days. Joey this, Joey that. My best walker, my number one boy, everything was grand. Then he'd say, oh, I wonder how Jesse's arm is, or how Jesse's leg is, or his face is. No, like, it was real Jekyll and Hyde. I was always real Jekyll and Hyde.
And did anything change immediately after that?
Everything changed immediately after that. I was terrified. I didn't know whether your mum was dead or alive. Soon as he dropped me to the house, that was it. The fourth threat to start. Tell anyone, I'll kill you straight away. Just all that. But in a couple of days, I was putting heroin through people's doors. Then we're doing our deliveries up in Fortlawn, Blanchardstown, rough parts, Blanchardstown, a lot of drugs. We pulled up beside this house. He lifted up the lock on the doors. He said, open your hand. I opened my hand and he shoved this little brown package into my hand. And there was like stones. Now, I'd seen heroin and I'd seen needles before all my life, growing up in Ballymore. I'd seen junkies lying on the stairs with needles hanging out of their arms. I seen them pissing and shitting on the stairs, sleeping on them. You'd have to step over them. I'd seen the cars come with the drug dealer and all the junkies running out of the flats, getting the drugs and running back in, doing the drugs. They were everywhere in Ballymore. But I'd never actually seen heroin in the way it comes, in the physical form. I've seen it on a foil and I've seen it in a needle, but I never seen it the way you get it before it comes to that. So it was like rocks. They were like three little stones. And as soon as he put it into my hand, I knew there was something wrong. And he says, go over to the door, bring the bottle of milk, put the bottle of milk down, flip the hatch, flip the letterbox, push it in and do not move until he had dropped. And I was just looking at him. He was like, do you understand what I'm telling you to do? And I said, yeah. He said, well, go and do it and do it now. And I went over, I put it through the letterbox. And the next minute, I could hear someone running to grab it. Got the fright of my life, ran back to the van. I got into the van. He locked the door and he started shouting, did you fucking do it? Did you do it? I said, yeah, I done it. I said, I'm after doing it. He said, did he get it? Did you hear it? I said, yeah, I heard him. I said, I actually heard him. I heard him running to go and get it. And straight away then it was, tell anyone about this. and we'll set your man up, I'll set your sister up. They'll find heroin in your ma's house, they'll find heroin in your sister's car. Don't ever tell anybody about this. And I didn't know what was going on. Like, my, all I knew, drugs were bad. Like, all I knew, heroin was bad. Like, my dad was concerned parents against drugs, big activist. And I knew what I was after doing was, it wasn't wrong. And then I was afraid he was going to die. I thought, I'm after giving it to him. What for? Like, what if he dies on the drugs? And then Kenny is telling me not to tell anybody. And then I went home that night and I was just lying there on the bed and I was thinking, oh my God, like, what my ma finds out, what my dad was alive at the time, and my dad would have killed me. And I was just terrified. I just straight away I felt the trap. The Jesse thing already, I was trying to figure a way to get away from it. And I was too scared. But once I done the heroin through the letterbox, then I knew there was no way going back. And then, because we'd be driving down the street and the guards would be pulling up and he'd be talking to the guards and he'd be telling me they're his friends and he'd be saying all I have to do is get one of them to drop something off. And, well, I don't know whether they were friends or not, they were friends or not, but he'd be saying this, do you get me? Then the next night then, it was just regular. I was going to every second house I was going to. I was either knocking on the door, giving them the stuff, they were giving me the money, or else I was putting it through letterboxes. And it's just, everything just started happening real, real, real fast. I just done what I was told and that was it. I felt trapped and, yeah, there was, once he kept mentioning my family, that there was no way I was going to stop. Because as long as I felt like they were going to be hurt. Everything changed. His mood changed, his demeanor changed, the way he spoke to me, shouting at me, telling me to hurry, things he did, everything changed. I was no longer a helper or an employee. He turned me into a, I don't know if a drug dealer the right word. He just turned me into whatever he wanted to turn me into. I don't know what I became, but I became really whatever he wanted me to be, I suppose. I was doing what I was told to do, when I was told to do it, and how I was told to do it, and if I didn't, there'd be consequences. I was terrified of him. And that's it then. You're locked in. He knew then 100% in his head. He thought, look, I have him now. I was his. Because I've done it straight away. I didn't question it. I done it out of fear or shock. I don't know, or maybe both. But whether he planned it from the beginning or not, I don't know. But definitely that night, I know he knew that he had me. And that was his, and that was it.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.